This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Nick,
All right, you ready to start the show?
Yeah, but can I ask you something real quick?
Yeah.
Are you cold?
I'm pretty cold.
You're cold?
I'm pretty cold.
I'm pretty cold, too. Do you think that's going to maybe impact how we do the show?
No, I think it'll be, you know, we're talking about ice stage music this week. I think it'll get us in the right mindset to be cold.
Okay, I just, you know, I just, if my teeth chatter anymore, they're all going to fall out.
Yeah, I feel like, you know what, have a little bit of this Slurpee. That'll help you out.
Oh, you know,
it's Matt, we're supposed to be cold.
Okay.
If we're not cold, we're not going to be in the right mindset.
Okay, you're right.
Oh, I'm gonna take a bite of this Chipwich. Oh, it's so cold.
Okay, yeah. Oh, how about some iceberg lettuce?
just hearing iceberg lettuce makes me even colder, which is good. That's what we want.
Here, let's watch this. This the only scene from the Titanic that features people being cold. The end.
All right, I think this is good. I think this is good energy to do the show.
Yeah. It's definitely easier to do than the normal show.
I froze solid.
Oh no!
I froze solid.
I got too cold.
We went too far. I froze solid.
Somebody get us out of the
somebody
ice blocks.
Somebody saw me.
Help
Rochelle,
me.
Rochelle, can you turn up the heat?
Rochelle, can you actually just?
I'm solid.
Can you leave the studio as is and we'll just thaw out?
I'll just be here. I want to stay. I want to be frozen.
Stay. Yeah, this is actually
like
easier, good for me. Maybe just like tell Conover that we're just going to be in here,
Tell Conover will be in here while he's doing factually. I'll just be frozen solid.
And it might actually, it might help. It might help us.
I think it'll help us.
At least I'm frozen by my friend.
Finish him.
Oh, shit.
Oh,
Sub-Zero.
No, Sub-Zero. Oh, no.
We feel cold and lonely, but also feel warm and cozy as we discuss ice stage music for the wintry season this week on Get Played. Wow, it's Get Played, your one-stop show for good games, bad games, and every game in between. It's time to get played. I'm Nick Weiger, along with Matt Apodaca.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Get Played. Wow.
Wow.
Wow. Heather is out this week, as you can probably infer. She's still recovering. Hopefully have her back real soon.
That's right. And so it's just us boys today.
Boys night!
Boys night!
That's enough of that.
Yeah, I immediately didn't like it.
That's not our energy.
No.
We're not boys' night guys.
No, we're men day.
We're men day. That's really that. What's really being manly is acknowledging that it's men day.
Yeah.
It's not boys' night anymore.
It's men.
Time
day,
you grow up and dude. Have it be men day.
Yeah. Wake up.
Here in men day, we talk about video games.
That's right.
Talk about games that we love. Games that we've played in the past, and we talk about all sorts of stuff. And I actually want to start a little bit more generally because we're talking about ice stage music today, which we'll get to.
Brr,
indeed. I wanted to talk about winter because you and I are both from Southern California,
that's
and Rochelle,
right.
our producer, is also from California, but up from NorCal. I have not experienced much cold in my life, and when I've experienced cold or winter, it has been like I'm a place that I don't live. And so
yes.
it's been like I was in Saskatoon, Canada in January. And I was like, this is impossibly cold. I cannot imagine living like this.
Yeah, yeah. I've spent some time in Oregon. I have family in Oregon and I visited them quite a bit and have seen the snow there. I've been up to Washington, been up to Mount St. Helens. You know, you learn about these dormant volcanoes in school. So I was like, I'd like to go see that. So we went to go see it.
Matt, that one's not dormant. It went off.
What?
Mount St. Helens, like, went off in, like, the 80s, didn't
it? Oh, it's dormant now.
Like, that's what you say until the next eruption. This thing's dormant. Then you're fucking showered with lava.
So this is an interesting new data point for me. Nick living in constant fear of volcanoes. Doesn't matter what you say about them. He's like, it could go off any time.
Look, I saw this documentary with Tommy Lee Jones. Thing might be right beneath our feet.
But I remember being there and be like, well, this is boring. But the snow is, like, it's so novel. And also, you know. Being from here, I've been up to Big Bear quite a bit in my time, and I've seen snow up there.
Yes.
But it's been a very rare instance where I've seen snow fall, like actually falling from the sky. And a couple years ago, I was in Chicago in January.
Wow.
And it started to snow there. And I was like, I knew that it was going to be a possibility that it was going to happen. And so on this trip to Chicago, I was like preparing myself and sort of being like, wow, this is going to be so idyllic and so like, beautiful. I was ready to like be kind of sweat, like I was romanticizing this snow, and it sucked actually like a lot. It was like really bad. It didn't snow that much, but it snowed just enough where I wasn't wearing like any eye protection. It was just getting in my eyes constantly, and I hated it.
Yeah, that's the thing, because I always, you know, I know a lot of East Coasters and people from the Midwest who, you know, romanticize, and Canadians who romanticize snow and think of like that, have such fond associations with it. But for me, it's like, and we should say, you know, despite living in California, at least my entire life, it's like California has the video game world map, like diversity in terms of biomes.
Yes.
Like you can, like you, there's the desert, there's the ocean, but you can go up to the mountains. Like you were saying, you can go up to Big Bear, you can go up to Mammoth where I've been and experience like snow. There's the Sierra Nevada mountains here, you know, it's like, it's all there. So I have experienced snow, but it's always been kind of like a distant exotic thing. And I've also never much cared for it.
It's
like, get this out of here. I don't need this stuff.
Snow's mid.
Yeah. I'd go less than mid. I'd say it's sub mid.
Do you think it's cringe? Do you think snow is cringe?
I think snow is a little bit cringe.
I think snow is cringe. I don't need it. But I do sort of get jealous when I see like all my comedy friends going back home to their East Coast wealthy families for the holidays.
Yeah, you're right. That's a different aspect when you find out your friends are rich.
Yeah, well, I like to go see that. I like to see the photos. They're like, oh, I'm posing with, you know, these fall leaves. And we get fall leaves here, but I feel like we don't get fall leaves like that.
Right, yeah.
They're either they turn a little bit of a color or they just completely fall off.
Lovely fall leaves on the yard in front of my guest house. Like, okay.
Yeah.
You're a guy who does improv?
Snow activities. Throwing a snowball, making a snowman, doing a snow angel. Cares. Go inside.
You think making a snowball is going to be the funnest thing? Because you see it, like for me, I always thought like cartoons and comics.
Yeah.
So I was like, this looks so cool. And then you actually do it. It's like, oh, my hand is cold.
And it's
and
like
also
mostly
it doesn't
dirt.
Like pack really well. Yeah. It's got a lot of like mud in it.
Yeah.
And you get hit with that and it hurts. Like hurts like worse than a paintball. It's like, oh, this sucks.
Yeah. It's
something fun about this.
No. And then shoveling a driveway.
Yeah.
Miss me with that,
I don't
want
to do that.
I'm not doing that.
Yeah. I feel like anytime I built a snowman, it's been gray. It's just like all muddy.
Yeah.
It's like, this is disgusting.
You made a yellow one time too, right?
All right. But what I do like about winter is being cozy.
Ooh.
I'm into being cozy.
What's everybody's favorite hot drink of choice? Mine's hot chocolate.
Hot chocolate's a good answer. I mean, if I'm not saying coffee, that's not the context.
Coffee's
that we're
off the table.
Coffee's not. It's not like you know, that's an every morning or in this case like an afternoon drink for me.
I know. Nick's flying off the walls right now.
Gotta have my Java. Gotta have my decaf oat latte.
And you know what he said too when he came in?
Yeah.
He put his finger up in front of my face and said, "Don't talk to me before I've even taken a sip."
Yeah, well,
good for your sake you took the note.
Yeah, I think I would have got my fucking head chewed off by this guy over here. He was so mad.
I think I like a, boy, I like a hot toddy.
Oh.
That's a fun thing to mess around with. And it's also like, yeah, that's so to me, like seasonal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Rochelle, you got an answer? Something hot you like?
A honey vanilla chamomile tea from a Celestial Seasonings.
Wow.
Okay, the specificity.
That sounds good. That sounds nice and cozy.
Yeah.
That's the bear.
It's cozy.
Yeah.
It's the bear.
That sleepy little bear. I guess there aren't that many hot drinks. It's not like we couldn't have done that all day.
Yeah.
I think like, we named all of them. Tea.
Tea, hot chocolate.
Hot chocolate, hot alcohol.
Yeah. That's it. I guess you could have like a hot cider, like a hot apple cider.
Yeah,
that's
fun. Like a mulled wine for the holidays is actually pretty nice. I like that quite a bit, but I'm not going to do that. If it's somewhere, I'll have it, but I'm not going to go do that myself.
Generally, though, I will say that winter is one of my least favorite seasons, but in the context of a video game, I do like ice and snow. Like,
oh, yeah.
I do like encounters like, oh, okay, this is the snow level or whatever. Like, anytime, that's fine. I'm generally into that. You know, the one exception a lot of times with platformers, and we experienced this recently with Super Mario Brothers 3, and the ice level is just like, you know, the gimmick of it is that there's no friction, you know, and so it affects your mobility quite a bit. And like that a lot of times is just like I find like a little bit annoying and frustrating if the physics aren't tuned up, but generally speaking, I do like encountering some snow in a video game.
Can I speak to that no friction?
Yeah.
I kind of like that part.
You like being able to slide, slip and slide a little bit.
I like slipping and sliding cuz it's like it's just a fun way to make traversal just a little bit more of a challenge.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And it's like it's learning to navigate into account for how much you're going to slide is kind of a fun exercise, I think. I think it's pretty fun.
It can be cool if done well, but there are times when it gets annoying.
Oh,
where
yeah.
It's just sort of like, you know, it's like water levels or whatever. How do you like ice?
And so this is why Weiger will forever be in Mount Podmore in the hallowed hallways of the, you know, the best of the best, right? I can just hear Ira Glass and Mark Maron being like, how do you like ice? Like they all get to this question at a certain point. I do like it, and it's actually kind of a problem, actually.
Yeah, do you chew it?
I'm an ice chewer big time, and my dentist is always like,
dentists hate that.
Here's 10 hacks dentists absolutely hate.
They do hate you chewing ice.
They don't like it at all.
They'll fucking lecture you.
And they tell me all the time that I do need to stop.
They also like know you do it too, which is another thing. It was
they,
like, you've been chewing ice, haven't you, Ben?
They love dentists love to make you look like the biggest asshole on earth.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, have you been flossing? And you'll lie and be like, yeah. And then they're like, okay, really? You definitely haven't.
Yeah.
But they actually can't catch me with that one now because I have been flossing a lot.
There you go. It's like a detective with a polygraph. It's just like they're ready to bust you.
Yeah. Or like Columbo at the beginning of the episode, even though he knows everything already.
Just 1 minute. Just one more question.
Do you like ice?
That's good.
I do like ice, and you know everybody has their preferences. I do like that Sonic like pellet ice.
Yeah, I love that kind of ice.
A home run. Because that's, if I'm going to chew it, that's actually like kind of not the worst one to be chewing on.
Yes.
It's pretty soft, actually.
I have heard that this is an American thing, that in a lot of the world, they don't love ice like we do.
Mm-hmm.
Like that it's just like it'll be like, you know, especially in Europe is just like the idea of like getting a glass of ice water or a soda with ice in it is so foreign.
Well, everything sucks over there, so it makes sense. No, shout out to all my favorite Europeans out there.
Yeah.
We love you here on the show.
Yeah.
Even though your drinks are often room temp.
I like one big cube. And I've said this before, and people are like, come on, the one big cube thing, really? But I was like, I love that one big cube.
I like it from a from an artistic standpoint.
Yes, yeah.
It makes the drink really pop. It's very interesting to look at. And you're not gonna really try to chew on that, are you?
And you're not gonna chug it. That's the other thing. Because it's like kind of like, you know, it's a little bit of a tooth stopper.
Yeah.
So like you get like a craft cocktail with that one big cube in there, and then it slowly melts over time. It's sort of like, you know, you're parceling out your alcohol a little bit.
But that's the only context that you're gonna get the big ice cube in the cocktail. You're not gonna put a
Yeah, not like a Pib Extra with one big cube.
Yeah,
what the fuck am
gonna,
I doing here?
You're not going to do
yeah,
that. But
Sprite Zero, can you get that with one big cube?
It sounds good.
Actually, because it sounds, sounds kind of fun.
Interesting that you went Pib Extra. Just a lot. There's already just a lot to unpack with you today here. Rochelle, how about you? Let me. I'm trying to enter these hallways as well. How do you feel about ice?
He'll get there.
Maybe I don't belong in the hallway because I have no preference for what kind of ice I get.
Do you don't like do you, when you say no preference, you mean what type of ice, or do you mean ice or no ice? Like,
oh,
it doesn't affect you.
What type of ice does not affect me?
Yeah.
I will say sometimes ice is too much. Sometimes I do want a room temperature water.
Okay, so water is one thing where, because I've actually got, you know, I always have, this is a little peek behind the pod here. I always have two beverages.
Yeah.
That's just my thing. I got two drinks so I can spill both of them all over the place. But I have like a decaf coffee. I got a hot one right now. And then I've got a room temp water. Because actually, when it comes to flat water, I do prefer it room temp generally, unless it's like really hot out. Because it just chills my teeth too much.
Does this track for anybody else? I know what I'm about to say doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
When water is too cold, it tastes different.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But it tastes a little different to me. I don't really like it that
much. I'm with you. Yeah, no, I don't want that to be too cold. But there's certain drinks I do like ice cold.
Yeah. Oh, like a frosty cold one, for example.
But I don't want ice in a cold
one.
No, I don't want ice in a brew dog.
A beer with ice? I might think you're Mork from Ork or something doing something that strange.
I will say that, you know, Natalie.
Do you know Mork and Mindy on this? Listen to this?
Yeah, most of our audience was born in 1965. Natalie took me to a Vietnamese restaurant once and it was like a you know, largely Vietnamese American clientele, and I was surprised that people were drinking Heineken with ice in it.
Oh, wow.
And I guess that's like I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just a thing specific to that country, or it was just a thing at this restaurant, but it felt like a thing that was just like, oh, this is an interesting cultural preference.
I just thought of a different type of ice that I also really like. It's often the ice that you get in like a Thai iced tea, where it's like,
oh sure,
really like crushed up.
Yeah, that's super crushed ice. Yeah, that's a blast.
That's my shit right there.
Should we switch topics? Should we do a different format?
Just do ice.
Yeah. The drink dudes.
Yeah.
Heather comes back. Hey, we're the drink dudes.
We're the
now.
Drink dudes now. Both Heather and Mitch are mad.
Rewind it back to the days of chillaxing on the beach and all-day fun with Spring Break on DraftKings Casino. Play exclusive games like Fan Fave Rocket. The excitement is endless, the vibes are right, and the cash prizes could be huge. New players, start playing with just $5 and get $100 back instantly in casino credits. Download the app and use code GETPLAYED to book your one-way ticket to fun with DraftKings Casino. The crown is yours! Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. 21 plus. Physically present in Connecticut, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia only. Void in Ontario. Eligibility and other restrictions apply. One per opted-in new customer. $5 wager required. Max $100 in casino credits awarded, which require one-time playthrough within 168 hours. See terms at casino.draftkings.com/promos. Restrictions apply.
Hey, buddy, I want to tell you about a new podcast you need to listen to. Crunchyroll Presents The Anime Effect explores anime and the way it shows up throughout our world. Hosts Nicholas Friedman, Alec Murray, and Leah President discuss the latest in news, updates, and deep dives on the shows and pop culture you love. From breaking down the anime awards to analyzing Godzilla Minus One to discussions with musicians like Yeji, stay up to date on the latest in anime with Crunchyroll Presents The Anime Effect. Hey, for me, I'm interested in hearing them talk about One Piece, because I've been getting into One Piece myself. And they're also talking about The Boy and the Heron and Studio Ghibli movies. things that I love. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, they get into. They do some gaming content. Kaiju number 8, that's a manga a lot of people like, that is turning into an anime. We'll see how that adaptation is. So listen now, wherever you get your podcasts, Crunchyroll presents The Anime Effect. Let's get on topic, actually. Let's talk about, what are you playing?
Wow. And Nick, for this one, because we're banking this ahead.
Yes.
We were going to talk about like ice games, like snow games, right? Winter. Yes.
I thought that was a thing we could get into. Yeah, we could just sort of talk generally about that. Although, if you do have anything else, feel free to shout out. I was going to shout out Bob Mackie's book.
Oh, yes.
Which has been out for a couple months now, but I'm just getting around to reading. Congrats to friend of the show, host of the great Talking Simpsons podcast, along with Henry Gilbert, Bob Mackie, on his new Boss Fight books. A version of Day of the Tentacle, which you can buy from bossfightbooks.com. Can you order it from there?
I believe so.
It is just an oral history of Day of the Tentacle, a game that we've covered on the podcast. Some of it is stuff that was previously published, I think, on US Gamer. A lot of it is new and is greatly expanded. It is very cohesive, and it's just like a really engaging read. And it's like just really cool to have like a text that's about something so specific and about a game that I have a lot of fondness for from somebody that I know. So check out that Day of the Tentacle book by Bob Mackie.
Wow, hell yeah!
Yeah. You should read it. You'd like it.
I'll
hand it over to you.
Oh, great.
I'll buy you a copy so we support our friend.
These books are run for a very reasonable price. Mm-hmm. I can source my own. I'll get this myself because that does seem like a fun read. In thinking about this, obviously, like there are ice levels in games, but there are very few. I feel like there are very few games that almost take place entirely in the snow.
Yes, that's the thing. Like, this is going to be an ice focused game. I do have a. I did think the ice level is like a different discussion.
Yes,
but I think as far as an ice game goes, I always think first and foremost of the SSX franchise. And I know there are some people who are Snowboard Kids fans, and I just, you know, I wasn't on board with Snowboard Kids. I didn't play the Snowboard Kids. I know some people love the Snowboard Kids. If you respect the Snowboard Kids, I'm not disrespecting the Snowboard Kids.
We love the Snowboard Kids. We absolutely love them.
But what I played was SSX.
Yes.
And I think the SSX games, particularly SSX Tricky, when they really got the format, but like it was like basically one of the only worthwhile launch titles for the PlayStation 2.
I recently played SSX Tricky at a friend's house.
Yeah.
And thought I'd have that muscle memory back. Did not.
No.
Did not have it back. Not in the same way that I took a long break away from Tony Hawk, but got back into Tony Hawk when the new one came out, and like all that muscle memory was still there. SSX Tricky felt hard to me, but I was also playing it on GameCube, which I was not used to.
Right.
At my buddy Connor's house. But I loved SSX Tricky so much, and I loved SSX 3 quite a bit as well.
So Tricky is where I fell off with the franchise. I don't know SSX 3 at all. Do you remember anything with SSX 3 specifically?
It was just like SSX Tricky is more of like, they're both pretty arcadey, but like Tricky is Crazy Taxi.
Yes.
And SSX 3 is maybe like Forza Horizon or something, where it's like it's a little closer to the real thing, but fun. More of a sim, but still pretty crazy. Like there's nobody doing the worm on their
right
on their snowboard as a trick, but I liked that one quite a bit, and also because I think SSX 3 like really pushed the PlayStation 2. It looked really really nice at the time to me, and I was like, I can't believe that this is on the PlayStation 2 because it looked real.
Well, so like ice, like snow is one of those things like water that like it's just, you know, you could, they can, when it gets rendered visually effectively, it is like, oh wow, that really feels spectacular. I don't know. I mean, maybe because it's just especially in the when environments were a little bit more low poly and like just doing like a big mm-hmm. vast smooth section of terrain.
Yeah.
Like maybe you could get away with that a little bit more. Maybe this was like a way that like it justified that. So, I don't really know what I'm saying here. I'm just kind of saying like I wonder if that part of why these games look so good is because they were able to take the technical limitations of the age and like you know turn them into an advantage.
I'm seeing here on the SSX3 Wikipedia, the reception. There's like a chart here or you know a grid that has all the outlets that reviewed it for each console.
Yeah,
and it has unanimous praise, mostly critical reception. The one that I'm interested in right here, 3100% across the board for the Xbox, PlayStation 2, and the GameCube versions of this game from Playboy magazine.
Wow. Playboy was reviewing video games for a time.
Do you think, is it a different Playboy, you think?
No, I think it's that. I mean, no, I don't think it's like a video game publication.
Wow, I'm hovering over the definitely not Purple Link. And
yeah, it's that Purple Link for the Wikipedia for Playboy.
Yeah, I really like to only read the articles. But I wonder what the calculation was there. They're like, we're not selling enough of these magazines. We have to have video game reviews in them.
Honestly, I think that probably was a thing of just like they saw that their audience was getting older and older and were just like, yeah, let's try to be fucking Maxim. Let's try to be FHM. And then, of course, those publications don't exist anymore anyway.
No, and so many magazines have shut their doors. We got to bring magazines back. I guess they're not good for the environment.
I like magazines.
I
like a magazine.
I was thinking the other day that it sucks that Nintendo Power isn't a magazine anymore. Or exists at all. Yeah. I would love a Nintendo Power magazine to come back. I'd love to just be flipping through a magazine and be like, what's Mario up to?
It is amazing also that they were just so ahead of the curve in terms of, because that's now every company kind of handles their own media, right? They all have their own PR organizations, and Nintendo was just like, you know, we're just going to pull out a full-on propaganda rag. We're just going to have a fucking, our own version of Pravda is just going to come out under the Nintendo Power label. We're just going to send it to kids, and we're going to tell them every game is good.
Yeah, and like, but that's like, that's what you want in a magazine.
Exactly,
you're like, wow, this is good.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get this. But I'm thinking of recent snow games for me, and a big one.
By the way, just but before we got away from SSX, I was like looking at it because similar to you, I was like looking for info through this as we were talking, and I was like, what the hell happened with this franchise? And I was just like, oh yeah, EA. Mm-hmm. It's just a fucking EA franchise, and like everything, they eventually, you know, bleed it dry and then kill it. It's a bummer.
Such a shame.
Yeah, I feel like they could that's due for a proper reboot, but we'll see. Or requel.
There's so many of these games that I think look fine enough that I would take a port of just SSX Tricky and have it on Switch. I'm fine with that. They don't have to make it too much nicer.
Maybe the Tony Hawk 1 and 2 treatment is in the works.
Yeah.
Who knows?
In the same way, I've said this probably a million times too, and I just want a port of NBA Street Volume 2. I don't need the first one. I don't need the third one. Two only.
But what they would do is they would just, like, they'd have lost the license for everybody,
yes.
So it'll be a bunch of generic-sounding characters.
Mm. As long as they have that sweet, sweet music in there, I'd be happy to hear it. A big snow game came out just last year, Nick.
What's that?
God of War Ragnarok.
Wow, great pull.
Takes place in Fimbulwinter, my dear.
That's a snow game. That's a big-time snow game.
A lot of snow. You get your fucking ass handed to you by Thor in the snow. It's really, really good, too. It's a super, not all of it is snow, but a good majority of it is that at least the very intro is in the snow. And then you get back into snow a little later once you're coming back to, you know, some of the places you've been before. But you gotta traverse a lot of snow, a lot of ice, actually. But that's probably the biggest snow game in recent memory.
That's a good one. The other one I was thinking of in recent times was Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze.
Oh, yes.
Which
yeah.
I loved. I loved that fucking game.
I never finished
so
it, but I put some time into it and was like, this is as good as Donkey Kong Country can be. This is fantastic.
Just turn on the fucking funky mode and blaze through it.
Hey.
You get to play Funky Kong and you can't fail.
I live my life in funky mode, baby.
I just put on sunglasses.
I will.
Wow, we actually did it for the bit.
I've gone funky mode.
I don't know if we can handle funky Matt. We'll
try. I'm gonna take it. I can't really see. I love a visual bit for the podcast. That's good. People like that.
Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze, I thought was a lot of fun, and also just like a good way of what we were talking about of like it. I think it did have a good balance of using the what can sometimes be a liability or can feel kind of clunky to play ends up being, you know, that I thought it was well executed, the ice physics in that game. But the one I was going to talk about just a little bit, just real briefly, is Icewind Dale. There were a couple of these that they made back in the day. These were around the era of Baldur's Gate.
Oh.
And they were developed by Black Isle, and they had they released a sequel as well. I never got around to playing the sequel, but I did play the first game and the expansion. And it basically was like, you know, kind of the same sort of thing of Baldur's Gate, but in the way that Planescape Torment took the Baldur's Gate, you know, sort of the engine and sort of the structure of it, but like made it much more plot focused and much more about the story and much less about the combat. This went in the opposite direction, and it basically was like so focused on combat. You created your entire party. You didn't just create a player character.
Wow.
And so like that in of itself took a lot of time. The score was by Jeremy Soule, and I actually thought about picking a track from this one for my Ice Stage music, but as I was going through, I as much as I like it, I feel like I had some other stuff that was kind of similar, so I'm not pulling from that. But it was a really fun and really intense PC RPG back in the day. It came out in like 2000, and another franchise that's kind of dormant, but I feel like in this, when we're seeing like Baldur's Gate 3 having such a, you know, such this amazing reception right now, I wouldn't be surprised if someone tries to resurrect the Icewind Dale franchise, knowing that a lot of those fans, you know, also exist.
Not unlike the aforementioned volcano, Mount St. Helens. Not actually dormant, maybe. Maybe we'll see its return.
Maybe, yeah. Is that why the word dormant is in my head?
I think so.
Can you think about dormant volcanoes that aren't actually dormant all day?
Yeah, just living in fear constantly. It's like, it's happening!
Icewind Dale's my pick. Should we talk a little bit of music?
Let's talk tunes, my man.
Remember when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported the parents back to their home countries while keeping the kids in the United States? Well, believe it or not, there are hundreds of families who have still not yet been reunified.
Although we as a community may feel hopeless at times, I recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm-reduction-based practice.
They've reunified over 100 refugee families ripped apart by Trump's zero-tolerance policy. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family to find legal representation, housing, and counseling that they need in order to heal and get on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like me and believe that all families belong together, then join me in supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website at alotrolado.org/volunteer.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, so the topic is now that's what I call video game music, Ice Stage music.
Burr
indeed, my good boy. Oh, I also want to shout out a couple of games that aren't like ice games, but that have I just in my notes that are but that have like very big ice sections.
Mm-hmm.
Metal Gear Solid is a big one.
Oh yes,
and then Uncharted 2 has some great ice venturing. Love the ice sections in that game.
I gotta play through those.
I'd played Uncharted, but I had not played Uncharted 2 and 3 until a few years ago. I think I played through them in quarantine and talked about it on the podcast
right.
in our old format. And I think they absolutely hold up. You play the play the re-releases. All right, how do we want to do this, Matt? Do you want to start? We've just basically each picked out some Ice Stage music that we like, and we're gonna alternate.
Yeah, I'll start. You know, I didn't even know where to begin, really, because I feel like...
I know where to begin.
You know where to begin?
Yeah.
For me? Or for you?
No, for me. But I'm just saying, if you don't know where to begin, I have a place to begin.
You begin.
Okay, I'll begin. Because this is the intro of a game, and this is an intro of one of the greatest JRPGs ever made. This is the intro for Final Fantasy VI. This is by Nobuo Uematsu. And there's some run-up up to this point, but there's a point, and I think in the video I sent you, Matt, you can watch the visuals of it. It's a point where Terra, who is effectively the protagonist of this game, and two other soldiers walk in their mechs through an endless blizzard, through an endless Iceland, and while that is playing, this track kicks in. Are you watching it? Doesn't look cool?
It does look really cool. They're just kind of walking, and but they're big.
Yeah. The lonely dirge of marching to battle.
And so in the pixel remaster of this, they removed the credits.
Wow.
So it's just them silently walking with like nothing going on.
I wonder why they did that.
No idea.
It's weird. Anyway, this track's an all-timer. And I just have such like a vivid memory of just experiencing that for the first time. So this one always says ice to me.
That did say ice.
Yeah.
That was frigid, my dog. I'll start here.
Wait, so you mentioned the pixel remasters? So I know you're playing through the Final Fantasies. Remind me if you played six.
I did not get to six. I am somewhere in the middle of four. I did fall off of that playthrough, and
that was an ambitious project to play through all the Final Fantasies.
We were
talking or will be talking. I forget which order this is coming out about Final Fantasy VII, and. You know, like I think if you go with this project, you'll want to actually play through Final Fantasy VII once you get there.
I think I'd like to do it because that just seems like something I should have done already. I should have just done this before. But you know, we don't have to belabor the point of there's just no time and infinite amount of games to play. This first song from me is from one of my all time favorite games, a game we covered on this show, Pokemon Gold. And you know, in the first Pokemon games, Red, Blue, and Yellow. Each gym has a type, right? You got your fire, you got water, grass, electric, normal.
In the heyday of BuzzFeed quizzes, was there ever like a which Pokemon type are you? That feels like something that would have
existed. I'm sure there had to have been, and now
there's
too many types. Yeah. But they added some new types to Pokemon Gold and Silver, one of them being ice.
There is a BuzzFeed quiz. Let's find out which of the 18 Pokemon types you are.
Oh my God! How long is the quiz? We can't do this.
Why can't we do this?
Because you're scrolling and it hasn't stopped.
This is way too long. This is so long. I cannot believe how long this is.
I'm sure a lot of
they really want to stay you and keep you engaged with this page.
Yeah,
Get fed all their ads.
It looked like it was mostly ads, but this is from a section of the game that is very challenging, and it's this. Part it's called the ice path, and so you're in we talked about this lack of friction.
Yes.
So you're in a cave where there is a bunch of ice everywhere, and you have to navigate the cave. The caves are like puzzles, and so you have to figure out how to skate across each of the ice planes basically to land in front of or have a boulder stop you so you can get to this ladder that you can't just walk over to. You have to go a very specific direction. And this is the music from the ice path from Pokemon Gold and Silver.
Ah, this rips. I know this track.
It's like kind of aggressive because like... It's a hard part of the game. But this part right here, now that sounds like ice.
Yeah. Yeah, that crunchy bass line.
Yeah.
I mean, it just feels like it would be in like a rap song.
It's really, really good. But I did bring in, for a point of comparison, because the game was remade for the DS under Pokemon Heart Gold. And so here's that very same track from the DS version.
I like that. I thought about pulling in one of the orchestral scorings of the Final Fantasy VI track. Because sometimes I like those rearrangements, and other times I'm like, I don't know about this. I like the original. This is good. This is a good arrangement.
This is really, really good. The, I mean, Heart Gold is like a perfect execution of that type of thing.
Yeah.
Of the remake that improves upon the original. It's so good.
But there's something that you're just getting from that of just like how much the character of the instrumentation affects like the mood of it, and it affects how it comes across. Because like that second one sounds a lot more, even though it sounds like mysterious, it sounds less threatening than the first one. The first one feels like someone's going to stomp on your throat.
Equally as cold, though.
Yeah, they're both cold.
I'm getting kind of cold.
You're getting cold from here listening
to
this?
I feel like Jack Nicholson at the end of The Shining right now hearing that one.
Oh, Matt, warm yourself up.
Okay.
Did I talk about the book The Shining on this pod? I can't remember.
I don't know.
I read the book The Shining. Shout out to the Just King Things podcast, which is a reads through all of Stephen King's books in chronological order, and I've been reading all of his books and listening to that pod as a companion. It's a great show. And a great motivator to get through it. But, you know, a while back at this point, I read the book The Shining. And I think like it and the movie are basically equally good. The book is certainly like perhaps a little bit more problematic, has some stuff that hasn't aged as well. But I think it's like it's just got such it adds such interesting detail and depth to it. And it also, I think, really is a great psychological portrait of both addiction and also like gradually losing your mind. And that's just sort of stuff you don't really, you know, just because it's a different medium, it doesn't communicate as well on film. Although it's really effectively portrayed by Kubrick, obviously, and Nicholson. Anyway, the big difference, or one of the big differences, is how it ends. So the first thing...
This is our new favorite thing that we do.
Yeah.
You tell me something insane of an ending that I haven't somehow been spoiled.
So the ending of the movie, obviously he frees to death like you reference. The ending of the book is the caretaker, the groundskeeper rather, who arrives... who also has The Shining. I can't think of the character's name right now. Played by Scatman Crothers. He arrives and to rescue the family. In the movie, he's basically immediately killed, despite traveling all the way across the country. And in the book, he succeeds.
They didn't take that into consideration, really. It's like actually
kind of
rude
to this guy. Just get an axe to the back as soon as he shows up.
Just got here.
You know how expensive it is to book a last-minute flight from, like, Miami to rural Colorado?
And then that
during
drive.
The Christmas season? Yeah, and then that drive. They had to get in the snowmobile?
There was no way that drive was, like, sub 3 hours.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Anyway, so, like, in the book, he doesn't fail. In fact, he succeeds at rescuing the family. And there's this thing about the boiler that's going in the book the whole time. So the ending of the book is him, like, driving away with the family... on a snowmobile as the hotel behind them explodes. And it's just like, man, that is so completely different. It works in the book, but it's like so completely dissonant versus what you know from the movie.
That's because like the ending is so...
It's like a Michael Bay ending.
Yeah. Like, they had to like make it an action movie. Like, oh, this book wasn't exciting enough. Let's blow up the hotel.
Yeah, I know. It's like the opposite of what would happen. But instead they make a much more like kind of subdued sort of ending in the movie.
Is it a thickie?
That's a big boy.
Ugh, that's not what I wanted to hear.
I feel like it's a pretty substantial read.
I'd like to read the novelization of the movie then. It's a little bit shorter, maybe.
Start with a Bob Mackie book. Work your way.
Okay, yeah. Sort of get a taste for reading. Nick, you're
That's
up.
A good pick. My pick is from the Banjo-Kazooie franchise, and I thought just, you know, we had these first ones are perhaps a little bit more melancholy. Or even upsetting. This one is just pure winter wonderland. This is Freeze Easy Peak by Grant Kirkhope.
Horns? Back me up on this.
Yeah.
I think you'll agree with me. Horns is winter.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
We're not hearing them now, but...
But, I mean, it just sort of announced the arrival of winter, and then we're just kind of living in this sort of, you know, this percussive sort of sleigh bell thing that's going on.
Yeah, in the same way that,
the horn's back now, doing this little lead here.
You can't hear, like, that type of bell without thinking Christmas. Yeah.
Anyway, this is very, like, kind of, you know, Tim Burton adjacent, I would say. Like, this would not be out of place in, like, The Nightmare Before Christmas. But, you know, a really good ice level in this game, and I think this the soundtrack's a nice pairing for it. You like them Banjo-Kazooies?
I was just about to say, I've never played it.
I think one is the only one that's really worth playing. I think 2E is just a bloated mess, and Nuts and Bolts is like what, and it has its defenders, but it's kind of whatever.
I didn't have the Nintendo 64.
Yeah, that's a big
So I just never got around to it. But I feel like had I played it, I probably would have liked it.
Yeah, well, the thing is, like, I did have a Nintendo 64. The Nintendo 64 had like 8 games total that were worth playing, mm-hmm. like, and some very, very high highs. But the thing was, like, when Banjo-Kazooie would come out,
lower your
like,
pitchforks, everybody.
Yeah, it'd be like an oasis in a desert. It's like, oh man, here we go. Here's a fucking AAA rare game.
I like their vibe.
The guys, Banjo and Kazooie.
I like them a lot.
Yeah, they're a good duo.
Yeah, that's fun. They're so, you know, in the same way that I like any of those like Instagram posts that are like these animals that shouldn't be getting along are best friends.
Yeah,
I love that.
It definitely is one of those situations, you know.
Yeah. If Banjo-Kazooie was on Instagram, they'd be the biggest thing on Instagram.
People would love this bear with a bird in his backpack.
The fact that this bipedal bear that has clothes and a backpack is friends with a horse.
Yeah.
Not a horse, a bird.
Yeah.
My brain's going a little fast from this Coke Zero.
Slow down, Turbo. Put those sunglasses back on.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I got to get back into funky mode real quick.
Michelle, did you ever play a Banjo-Kazooie?
No, I never played it.
What systems did you have when you were younger?
I had PlayStation and a Game Boy Color.
What were some of your favorites from that era?
There was American and Ashley game.
Okay. Yes.
Love that.
That's.
Do you remember which one?
I think it's called Sweet 16, and it basically was like a... almost like Life the Game Board, but as a Mary-Kate and Ashley, and there was like mini games.
So this was this Sweet 16 License to Drive?
Yes.
So
my God.
It looks like this was basically like a Mario Party, but with Mary-Kate and Ashley.
Yeah, it was like Mario Party. Exactly.
Wow, that rocks. I'd never even heard of this game.
This is the type of stuff that when my fiance asks what we cover on the show, she's often asking, why haven't you covered Mary-Kate and Ashley Sweet 16?
That rocks. Banjo-Kazooie had a kind of a Mary-Kate and Ashley sort of synergy to the two of them.
I guess they did.
Collaborated on some bangers.
you mentioned just a second ago, Nick, that if that was in like a Tim Burton Nightmare Before Christmas like movie, it wouldn't stand out. It wouldn't be out of place. I don't think this one would either, as a matter of fact. My next pick is from Kingdom Hearts 2. Christmas Town from the Nightmare Before Christmas area.
Wow.
Here we go.
I didn't know this was coming.
And so what this does, very effectively, I think, is blend the Tim Burton, like, or the, you know, the, I guess, the Danny Elfman score.
Yes.
The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, I said
Christmas
Tim Burton.
Music.
I meant Danny Elfman. Yeah. I said the wrong thing.
The Nightmare Before Christmas score with this, like...
Is he canceled now, by the way? Should
we, I think so.
All right, well, I feel less bad about it.
Yeah. but he, like... The game... The score does a good job of blending that style of music with the, like, music of Kingdom Hearts. And I think this is just a great track from a great game with a lot of great songs.
Wow. That's a great pick. I think the other thing it does is that it says Christmas without quoting a specific, like, Silent Night or Jingle Bells.
Yeah.
Just sort of evoking that sort of mood and sensibility.
Yeah. Like, if this was playing at a Christmas parade, no one's going to be like, what the fuck is this?
What is this?
What the hell? They're dropping new Christmas bangers and they're not telling anybody about
like
it?
We Three Kings or something, I know.
Yeah. Joy to the World. Or there's a lot of them with joy. The First Noel, perhaps.
Did you play this Mary-Kate and Ashley game for the Game Boy Advance? Is that what you're playing it on, or you're playing it on PlayStation?
PlayStation 2,
okay, got it.
I think.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a couple of versions here. I won't just be buried in this, I promise.
The soundtrack is very good.
Okay, well, if you want to cue up a track, we'll get it going later.
But it's not icy. It's very beachy.
we'll have that as a palate cleanser at the end, then. If you want to pick one out, we'll cue that up. I will stay in Ice Town right now. In fact, we'll stay in an ice town. This is the town that you get to in Act 5 of the Diablo II Lord of Destruction expansion. The track is called Fortress by Matt Uhlman. And I played this on the podcast before, but I had to bring it back. Horns, baby. A little wintry horn. A different sort of horn. Either an English horn or an oboe. I think it's an oboe.
This also kind of sounds like The Nightmare Before Christmas, kind of.
Yeah, it all kind of seems to be saying in the same sort of tonality. I mean, what I like about this track, first off, is that I heard it so many times and I never get tired of it. But also, it was just like, this is, to me, is one of the best expansions slash, you know, DLC before DLC when these things were sold at retail.
Yeah.
Ever made. And the music was so good in Vanilla Diablo 2 that they were able to have all these new tracks in an expansion that basically entirely lives in an ice biome. It's all like in this wintry sort of north of the wall sort of area, and I think the music absolutely lives up to the base game. But this track to me says so much about like isolation and like kind of like just trying to be having to hold strong amidst the desperate, circumstances you find yourself in, up in this stronghold of barbarians, besieged by Diablo's minions, in the wintry north.
You're hearing this, and then Deckard Cain says, "Stay a while and listen," and you're like, "I think I will."
Yeah, I don't want to go out there.
Yeah, it's too cold.
You fucking killed by Bale? No, thank you.
I'm bringing something to the show right now that we haven't really talked about a lot on the show at all. I don't think we've ever really talked about Crash Bandicoot.
We have, considering how long the podcast has been going, a real dearth of Crash Bandicoot content.
I was a big Crash head when I was a kid. I loved Crash. My first Crash was actually Crash 2.
You know, I'm remembering the one thing we did have Alex Berg on the podcast played Crash Bandicoot in some commercials.
That's right, yeah.
But that was basically, that was the time we spent talking about Crash, I think.
That was probably the extent of it, yeah. And I think our pal Jordan Morris wrote some jokes for the newest Crash.
That's right, yes.
So that's the only capacity he's come up. I was a big Crash 2 head. It's called Cortex Strikes Back is the subtitle. That was my very first Crash. There's some snow levels in Crash 2, and so I brought the music from Crash 2 that is in those snow levels. The snow levels being Snow Go, Snow Biz, and Cold Hard Crash. And this is the music that plays in those levels. Here you go.
Cold Hard Crash is a great pun.
It's really, really good.
Different energy than we've had so far.
Yeah, it's
a little more up-tempo.
What I like about it is it sounds like all the other Crash music, but it just has, jingle bells on it. The music in those games are really, really fun, and I spent a little bit of time with the Insane Trilogy, the remasters of those games, and they're all so fun and so good.
Yeah.
I love Crash.
A little bit of xylophone there, or whatever mallet instrument that is, really nice. I think Crash 2 was that one I bought, because I know Crash 1 I rented, I never owned. But I did, I feel like, was Crash 2 a two-discer, weirdly?
I don't believe so.
Maybe I'm misremembering it, or maybe it was a different Crash.
It's possible they sold Crash 2 and 3 together at some point, I think.
I definitely played 2.
3 is also really, really good. Those are my Crash games. I didn't play Crash 1 until, way later, somehow. Somehow I missed it. In the same way that Austin Powers 2 was my first Austin Powers.
Insane.
Yeah. You get it.
But also, come on.
I think the first one came out and I was just a little too young to go see it. But by the time 2 came out, also, Two, one flopped.
One was not like a big hit,
yeah.
But then it did really well on DVD, I think.
Yes.
And then two comes out, and two is like the number one at the box office in the year that the fucking same year as Phantom Menace. It was like a huge hit.
We used to have it all. Star Wars in the box office and Austin Powers.
Austin Powers is so funny. They got to bring Austin Powers back.
And I think they can bring Austin Powers back because his whole it's not bad.
No.
He's always asking for enthusiastic consent and then just like drops it if he doesn't get it.
Yes.
And he's like, I'm done with this.
Well, and also this whole thing is that he's just like, oh, this is, everyone's telling me this is inappropriate behavior because the time,
yeah.
he it absolutely trusts it. He's not fucking Duke Nukem.
No. Or Pepe Le Pew for that matter. I think he could exist in a modern world and maybe he goes to the future.
I don't know how, this is the thing, is like Mike Myers would not want anyone else to play it, but I think the way is you'd have to get someone to do like a young Austin. That'd be the only way to go with it. Am I looking at him?
I think you're looking at him, baby. I'll do all the parts. I'll do Dr. Evil. They'll simply call him Bastard is the one edit I'd make. I'll be Goldmember.
There you go.
And you know what? I'll take the Love Guru for a spin too. Just kidding. I won't do that.
Keep the Love Guru out of there. Yeah. all right. Let's see. What that was your pick?
That was my pick.
That means it's my turn, which means a game we covered this year was the Metroid Prime Remaster.
This is a great one.
Some great, great snow music from this game. Kenji Yamamoto was the principal on the score for this one. This track is Vendrana Drifts.
So this one does a good job already of communicating not only snow, but also space.
Yes. It somehow says both ice and future.
Yes.
Winter, but science fiction.
Yeah.
It's able to communicate that all with music.
Man, this game is so fucking good.
It's really good.
I wish they would get those other two out on the Switch before the Switch 2 comes out.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with the other Metroid Primes. I feel like they're probably not going to get proper remasters. Nintendo's so fucking weird. This one sat on the shelf forever, too.
Yeah, they had it finished for 2 years.
Then again, maybe they're just done, and they'll just be released randomly.
Yeah. You know what's going to happen?
Yeah.
They're going to put them out on December 26th.
That's the kind of thing they do. They come out on Boxing Day.
Yeah, they're crazy.
How many more you got, Matt?
I think I just have but one more.
Okay, then I'll narrow my picks because I've got a couple others.
And so I'm
just going to pick one.
My final pick is from one of the big games of this year, The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom.
Wow.
And, you know, there is actually a lot of snow in this game. There's there's a whole area where there's snow.
Yeah.
There's mountains galore. The higher you up, go up, the colder it gets. That's just kind of how mountains work. And this is from the Frozen Rito Village. You get to the Rito Village, the top of this mountain,
yeah.
And it used to be bustling.
No, this is one of the sequences I played. I fell off this game when I got here.
And people walking around, hanging out. But now you get up there and it's desolate, covered in snow. Where is everybody?
Where's Hello?
Everybody? Hello?
Is anyone out there?
And who?
Those are the vibes right now.
If Link could talk, that's what he would say.
Yeah.
And it's not that he doesn't talk, he can't.
He can't.
But you see all these little Rito children running around, and they're like, we gotta figure out what the fuck's going on. So you're working with these kids?
Yeah.
It's a great sequence of the game, of a game with many great sequences. And this music also rips and communicates cold really well.
It does communicate cold.
I almost brought in
both cold and magic.
Yeah, we gotta kind of go back and say what the other ones do too. I almost brought in the sound from when you start to freeze a little bit, because there's like a specific sort of like,
yeah,
almost, not like a ping, but a sort of like, an audio vibration kind of that plays when you when you're freezing in that game.
That's a great pick. I've got one more. My final one, I'll say both that I was going to say, and I'm just going to pick the one. The one that I also had on my list that I won't play, because I played a different winter track. But there's like three tracks for each season in Stardew Valley. And so the one I'd picked was, you know, by Concerned Ape, aka Eric Barone, Nocturne of Ice. I was going to play that winter track. But instead, I'm going to opt for a track from a game that we don't talk about as much on the podcast. We did dedicate an episode to it.
Pal Zach Koyama.
Yes, that's right. And I know there are a lot of people who have a lot of fondness for this game, and it's really impactful for them. And, you know, for me, I think this is my big takeaway is just how good the score is. And so there are a few different snow tracks from this one, but I went with Snowy by Toby Fox from Undertale.
I know I said that horns is winter,
yeah,
but piano is also winter, too.
Yeah, a little tinkly piano that's very wintry.
Charlie Brown.
Vince Guaraldi Trio. Come on. This is one you just want to sit in for a while. Toby Fox and Concerned Ape both, like, solo devs.
Yeah.
To some degree. Toby had assistance on Undertale. Concerned Ape made Stardew Valley all on his own. But also who do the music for those games, which to me is just, like, another thing. It was like, that skill alone is enough. You don't have to do all the other stuff.
It's hard to hear stuff like that because we can barely do this. But it is really, like, impressive, and, like, just, like, that both things are good.
Yeah.
You would expect one to, like, not be as good as the other thing, but, like, they both stand on their own as, like, good pieces of work.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, when you, like, a lot of times everyone has, and it's with a solo dev is like, they've got their superpower, be that, like, art or composition or, you know, the tech side of things as a coder, but just the ability to do everything to proficiency on a scale from proficiency to excellence is just like that sort of all around skill is really, really amazing. Do you have one more, Matt?
That was it.
Oh,
for
you played all of yours.
Yeah.
How did I start? And then I also went last.
Cause you have the extra one too.
No, but I didn't play the extra one.
Oh, did I? I didn't skip one.
I played 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 tracks.
Oh, you know what? I played two of mine were, back to back because of the, they were both from Pokemon Gold, but one was the remaster.
Oh, okay. Got it. Yeah. So I had Final Fantasy VI Intro, Banjo-Kazooie, Freeze Easy Peak, Diablo II, Lord of Destruction Fortress, Metroid Prime, Fendrana Drifts, and Undertale Snowy.
Yeah, and I had from Pokemon Gold, the Ice Path music. I had from Crash Bandicoot 2, Cortex Strikes Back, Snow Go, Snow Biz, Cold Hard Crash. I had from the Kingdom Hearts 2 Final Mix, Christmas Town. And from The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, I had Frozen Rito Village.
And now we're going to hear as a palate cleanser from Mary-Kate and Ashley's Sweet 16 License to Drive. Rochelle, which track do we have here?
This is called I'm Gonna Like You Here by Lisa Carrera. All of the songs on this seem like they were just taken off of Bandcamp because there's barely any info on all these artists. I'm embarrassed now.
No, okay.
Definitely. This is so awesome. Funny.
The whole premise of this game is you're racing to get your driver's license against three of your other friends.
Very relatable for a teen. What felt more important back then?
Absolutely nothing. Kilimanjaro, New York City and Times Square. Cayman the Islands and that little cafe in Bel Air. London, England, Paris, Island, Mexico.
This is going to be the first episode that my fiance listens to because she legitimately sings this song every day. Like she loves this song.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
And she knows it because of this game. Because
I'm in love and I think I'm going to like it here.
Wow, I did not think anyone has ever heard of this song before.
That rocks.
It's so funny.
I'm very glad we listened to that.
Yeah, what a peek behind the curtain, truly.
I love her.
All right, it's time for the question block.
Ba-ding! And these are from our Discord, discord.gg/getplayed. Join the Discord, get in on the fun. Everybody has a nice time in there. So what are you doing?
Wholesome place. Hop on in.
Hop on in. This first one is from Modest Ghost. And Modest Ghost writes, I love the podcast. I was wondering, do you listen to older episodes you have done to see how much has changed as a person and content? Now, I'll say this.
Yeah.
I've listened to a lot of these because I listen nowadays. I listen back for notes and I give, if any, to Rochelle. But in the old days, I would get in the I'd get my hands dirty and I'd get in the mix and I'd hear all these episodes a lot.
Yeah, right.
It's sometimes several times if I was like doing several passes or whatever. So I've heard a lot of these, but I haven't heard the most recently that I've heard an older episode was when we re-released the Super Mario Brothers movie one that we did on the DLC, but that wasn't even that old in the run. It was like kind of somewhere in the.
This is to be clear. This is the Bob Hoskins Super Mario Brothers movie.
Yes, correct. The live action one. The live action one. But I'm gonna guess that Nick has heard none.
Yeah, no, I've never listened to the podcast. I don't want to hear myself talk. Mm-mm. I don't understand why anyone does.
Yeah.
But hey, it's worked out for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't want to hear my own voice.
No.
And so I've never heard an episode, a full episode of the podcast.
It is something that if I didn't like have to do it because it was my job previously, I probably wouldn't. But I do podcasts where I don't listen to the episode.
Yeah.
After having done it, like
no, if
as
I
a, guessed, as a
if
guest.
I guessed on a show I like, I'm always a little bummed because I like, oh well, there's an episode I can't listen to.
Exactly, so I don't go back and listen to that. But you have to become very you become aware of how you sound, all the things that you say that are like I'm doing it now, like the just the vocal like things that you do that
the
you
the tics
are,
you have when anytime you hesitate or repeat or stammer or repeat yourself,
a vocal pause, you know, these types of things. I'm just hyper aware of that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and it's a prison. It's an absolute prison. But thank you for the question, Modest Ghost. This next one is from Life is an Internet Superhighway, and they write, like Scrooge had his three ghosts of Christmas. Who are your three ghosts of gaming? King Boo, probably, number one.
Oh, this is what we're naming famous ghosts from video games.
I don't know. Maybe it could be ghosts of games we didn't finish. It could be our favorite ghosts.
Yeah, I guess it's pretty open-ended. I mean, you got to throw a Pac-Man ghost, right?
A Pac-Man ghost is in there, yeah. Inky.
Maybe you throw all three of them, Blinky, Pinky, Inky, and Clyde.
Yeah, they're all in there. King Boo, I think, is a good one.
King Boo's a good one, just as a representative of the Boos. Yeah, why not?
And then what about that horrific lady from P.T.?
I could also say you could get, like, a the big lady from Resident Evil Village.
Oh, Lady Dimitrescu.
Yeah.
Is she a ghost, though?
I never played it.
I didn't play it either.
Yeah. She's a vampire.
Is she a vampire? She's more of a vampire than a ghost. Did you play it?
No, but I watched a playthrough of it.
Is that something that you'll do often, like watch a playthrough?
Yeah, I watch a lot of horror playthroughs.
Okay.
I really like them, but I'm too scared to play them
myself.
Okay.
That's a good way to approach it, because Matt and I are cowards. I got to play 7 and 8. Just of the Resident Evils. Those are just like, fuck, I should. I had that feeling when we played the 4 remaster. I was like, I should just finally fucking do
it. I heard 7 is good. I'm a little bit more interested in 8, and it's not because of the big lady. I just think it seems more cool.
I mean, big lady doesn't hurt.
It doesn't hurt, but you know, she could be a normal sized lady.
Not the sole motivating
care.
Factor is me seeing this big lady.
No, yeah, it's kind of just not. It's barely part of it. It's not even the whole thing.
I guess the Luigi's Mansion ghosts are kind of adjacent to. We've already got a Mario canon ghost, so maybe we don't need any of those. But maybe Luigi's there with the Gust Buster.
Maybe Gooigi. Too.
Gooigi's pretty good. If I don't know if he is a ghost, but he is ghastly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I guess if that's how we're answering the question with ghosts, then those are good answers. If it's the other thing where it's like from ghosts of our back catalog, we'll be here all day. You know.
Yeah, I'm gonna say let's go with King Boo.
Yeah.
Let's go with the Pac-Man ghost, and then let's do a Call of Duty: Ghost.
Okay. Yeah. It's just to get that in there.
Yeah.
I know we don't talk about Call of Duty that much.
Yeah, that'll be the one time we talk about Call of Duty this year.
Yeah. This next one is from Cody.
Hi, Cody.
And Cody writes, what Christmas movie would make the best game, and what genre would it be? And so, in reading this question, piggybacking off the Scrooge question, I think, what is that story called? It's not called A Christmas Story.
A Christmas Carol?
A Christmas Carol would make an excellent, like, Hades-like, roguelike.
Interesting.
Where the ghosts are giving you tasks and you have to go through it. And, you know, you can, it could even be Scrooge McDuck for all I care.
But you're just kind of like reliving the same the same night over and over again.
You're
That's
reliving
the
same night, and then you have to, in this, you have to sort of do a series of things to correct the night or something.
It's very, what was I going to say? That's very, you know, Bill Murray was in Scrooged and also Groundhog Day. It's kind of a Groundhog-y Day Scrooged mashup.
12 Minutes meets Hades.
I like that. That's a fun pitch. I was going to say my immediate reaction was Elf, just because I feel like Elf is just like kind of like an adventure and kind of like, you know, you could play that as like a, you could do that as like kind of like an interaction focused, or a dialogue focused like RPG or something, or a, or an adventure game, a point and graphic adventure. But then as I was looking through the list of Christmas movies. I mean, Nightmare Before Christmas, if you got something that captured that aesthetic, and it just already feels like a video game world.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like a Nightmare Before Christmas, you know, platformer with that same sort of, you know, frame rate feel to it. Like it felt like stop motion animation. I mean, that feels like that would be the kind of thing that would be visually dazzling. Also, something like an Edward Scissorhands or a Gremlins that has some fantastical character at the root of it feels like it would be a natural candidate for a character action game.
There is a Nightmare Before Christmas video game that takes place 1 year after the events of the movie, and it's called Oogie's Revenge. And I did play this when I was a teenager.
What did it come out for?
It came out for PlayStation 2 and Xbox.
Okay.
And then there's it was released at the same time as Nightmare Before Christmas, The Pumpkin King for the Game Boy Advance, which is a prequel to the movie. And so simultaneously they released a prequel to the movie and a sequel to the movie, both video games. And I remember thinking that the PlayStation 2 game was not good. And it is worse because there are original songs in it that build off of the songs from the movie.
Yeah.
And they're, like, all pretty bad.
Mm.
But he has, like, it kind of plays like Devil May Cry, kind of. It's, like, sort of like an action-focused game where you're Jack Skellington and you have... It should have been a home run because Jack Skellington is such a cool character.
I'm looking at some footage of it now, and this looks like it actually looks pretty decent for what it is.
It looked cool, because then you can become the Pumpkin King.
Like, visually, it looks decent. Yeah,
you can be Jack Skellington regular. You can be Pumpkin King Jack, and you can be Santa Jack, and they all have sort of like slightly different move sets and like powers. But you always want to be. I feel like Pumpkin King Jack is like the coolest looking Jack.
Yeah, there was a. Of course, I mean, look, I'm not going to be the Die Hard as a Christmas movie guy, but there was the Die Hard, was there Die Hard Arcade? There was also Die Hard Trilogy.
Oh, yeah.
There were some Die Hard games that came out, but that feels like a thing where they could just like make an absolute banger of a game if they wanted.
Oh, yeah. This next one is from our old pal Drop King.
What's up, Drop King?
And Drop King writes, a franchise you love is now getting a tower defense game only available on phones. What is it? My first thought is God of War for some reason. I could see a God of War tower defense game. We're defending, like, you know, Mount Olympus or whatever.
Yeah. My first thought is, like, come on, man. Don't make my game I like into a fucking tower defense mobile game with a bunch of microtransactions.
They're going to do it.
I know. Come on.
Yeah, look,
leave Kirby alone. Kirby doesn't need to be in a fucking tower defense game.
I do think...
Loaded up with a bunch of different currencies that you have to exchange real money for so you can buy new sweaters.
I've been thinking about Kirby a lot recently.
Kirby rocks.
Actually. This is the year that I like really decided that I like Kirby.
Kirby's great.
That new one was really, really good.
Kirby delivers.
We loved Kirby. I guess my answer is God of War, and Nick's answer is, come on, man. this next one is from Vox the Devil, And Vox the Devil writes, I recently just picked up an Analog Pocket and I'm playing through Mother 3. Do you have any suggestions on what to play next on it? Any hidden handheld gems? Now, look, I have an Analog Pocket. I've finished some Pokemon games on Analog Pocket. Those are obviously go-tos if you haven't done those, which I can't imagine you wouldn't have. I played through Metroid Zero Mission on the Analog Pocket, and if you have not played Metroid Zero Mission, I feel like that's a safer recommendation for a game maybe somebody missed, because I certainly missed that. Zero Mission fucking rocks. It is
so
good.
Yeah, it's a good game.
It's really good. I'd say check that out. And I've actually been pretty interested in, I've been getting a lot of referrals for some Pokemon ROM hacks. Have you ever messed with a ROM hack before?
It's not really my thing, but I know some people who are really into it in terms of like extending the shelf life of a game and getting a bunch of new content out of a structure that you like.
There are these ones that I've been hearing about. I think there's one called Pokemon Prism or something, and it has a quest log and like things that other modern RPGs have that like Pokemon has yet to implement. And so people like seem to really like that as like in a different dimension, these Pokemon games became a little more serious and a little more tailored toward modern audiences.
I mean, you're the one with the Analog Pocket, so I think you're going to have the better answer for this. But in terms of what, because I also am not super sure like what it's capable of, what it can emulate. Although I imagine, you mentioned Zero Mission, so I think I'd imagine all those Game Boy Advance games are on the table.
Oh, what's that Astro Boy?
That's
game?
What I was just gonna say. Astro Boy feels like I can't remember the subtitle is.
Omega Factor.
Yeah, Astro Boy Omega Factor is a real gem, and you don't have to know anything about the anime. I certainly didn't to enjoy that game. I don't know how a WarioWare Twisted or something would emulate. I feel like it. I don't know if they'd be able to do that effectively. Yeah. So I don't know if I'd say that, but I would say Advance Wars is one I loved on the Game Boy Advance.
And I messed with that a little bit.
They did port it to Switch, but they redid the art style, which is completely understandable, but it's just not really as charming. So I guess the original WarioWare.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those are.
I don't know. This is one of those things where the question is like it's very open ended. So it's like kind of like I don't know what you've played and haven't played, and I'm assuming something. If I'm assuming something about your taste from the from having played Mother 3, then maybe I'd also steer you towards Golden Sun because there were a bunch of ports of Square RPGs to Game Boy Advance, but Golden Sun was an original, and that was a really cool game.
You might be able to find a modded version of Boktai 2, which we covered on this show, that usually has the requirement that you have to have the special cartridge for to get UV light in it to charge up your attacks.
God, what a pain in the ass!
I know,
shit was.
What a nightmare. But a cool, interesting game nonetheless. Cool. And finally, this next one
is fucking Castlevania's.
Oh, the Castlevania Advance games. Yeah. Yes. Those are all supposed to be pretty good.
I played them. I mean, Circle of the Moon. What were the other ones? Harmony of Dissonance, Aria of Sorrow. I mean, Symphony of the Night is the game. But as far as the Game Boy Advance, the Metroidvania Castlevanias on Game Boy Advance were all good, all worth playing.
And finally, this last one is from X Red Gambit from our Discord, and they write, "What do you eat during this holiday season? What video game food would you insert into your rotation?"
I think I got to get those fruits from Crash Bandicoot.
A Wampa fruit?
Fruits?
Yeah, Wampa fruit would be really good.
Yeah, give me a Wampa fruit cobbler.
You know those are juicy as hell.
They look juicy as shit.
Yeah. They look like, have I said this to you before about James and the Giant Peach? I always wanted to eat the big peach.
The peach looks good. I think that's part of what I think that the movie
Rochelle
does a good
and I
job
are like
of
the
making,
same age, so I think we have a lot of the same.
No, I think the movie does a good job of making the peach look toothsome.
It looks really good
because you understand why a kid would want to burrow his way in there.
And so in the same way that I've always wanted to eat the big peach, I've always wanted to eat a Wampa fruit.
I've said this. I don't remember. I've said it on the pod. Past guest Scirocco Dunlap.
That's right.
As a child actor, is in James of the Giant Peach. And has a line where, because he rolls into New York City, and she's like, "That boy's in a peach." That's Scirocco.
That's so good. And the second Henry Selick picture to be mentioned on the show today.
Wow.
We got Henry Selick on the brain.
Yeah, how about that?
I wonder if she got to taste the big peach.
I don't think that's how it works.
No, I wonder if she got to try it.
Well,
they had it on set.
Yeah.
Maybe she got to try it. But this holiday season, a big thing for one side of my family is that we'll be eating, you know, we'll be eating tamales, we'll be eating pozole, and that's like my favorite time of year because we're just eating that stuff nonstop. And I'll put away a bunch of tamales this year. And it's gonna
what's
so
your favorite protein in a tamale?
Ooh, you know, it's gonna be. In recent years, I've been a green chili and cheese guy. Like
oh,
that,
hell yeah.
That's like a really great one. Green chili chicken and cheese, I should say. But we do like a slow roasted sort of like beef, like a roast, like with red chili. And that's a home. That's always so good to me too.
What a hoot.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll eat a lot of those. And it's because my grandpa makes them and he learned how to make them from my great grandmother. And she learned to make them during the Great Depression. So they're very small. So you'll eat like eight of them and be like, this is, what did we do here? This is nuts. But so they're small by design, but they're very, very good.
I like that though. I like, it's like what, so sometimes the fun of sliders, like I get to feel like a giant for a little bit.
Yeah. So we'll be eating a lot of that, but what video game food would I want to insert into the rotation? You don't really eat a lot in a lot of video games. Like there's,
I mean, it depends on the game. Obviously, yeah. Hey, those Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom, Zeldas, you're eating all the time.
Some of those meals look really good.
Yeah.
Like the spicy fish on a stick or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Some of the stews.
Yeah. I don't want the dubious food.
No, you definitely don't want dubious food.
Get that shit away from me.
I'm going to stick with Wampa Fruit.
Well, then, if you're going to go with Wampa Fruit, I'm going to go with the random floor food that you can find in a Castlevania or something. A big plate of spaghetti or whatever it is.
Wall chicken?
Wall chicken. Yeah. I'll have wall chicken. Yeah. That's going to be good. And that's going to do it for the question block. And that's going to do it for this week's Get Played.
Big plate of spaghetti. It's very funny to think about that Castlevania. Fucking Dracula would hate that shit. It's loaded with garlic.
Oh,
get it out of here.
That's true. But then,
only Italian food in my castle.
That to me then is, I'm thinking that chicken is probably very plain tasting. It
probably
doesn't have a lot
is,
of seasoning on it.
That's why when I was playing Vampire Survivors and there's floor chicken and Vampire Survivors, it's your health item. But I was like, you know what? If you're in that kind of if you're in this sort of gothic setting, if you're in like the fucking 16th century or whatever, that a big roasted unseasoned chicken is still like the most delicious thing you could possibly eat.
Oh yeah,
there's nothing that exists that is like everything else you're eating is like fucking dried or like a fucking loaf of bread. You know, you're never experiencing any flavor.
When do you think in history?
Uh-huh.
Was the first time that like food was good?
Maybe in our lifetime.
Maybe I kind of think so.
When did Doritos come on the scene?
Yeah, I think it wasn't until Dorito when people were like, "We fucking did it."
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's this week's Get Played. Our producer is Rochelle Chen. Check out our paywalled show, Get Animated, where every week we cover a different series or movie. That's over at patreon.com/getplayed.
And guys, that'll do it. I'll see you next time.
And you know what got played this week? That track from Mary-Kate and Ashley, License to Drive. Let's hear it again.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.